Cameron Harris flying here, but unfortunately, he's based in Catalonia. And Catalonia is on absolute lockdown at the moment. Everyone is quarantined to their houses, there are no flights out of there, and as such, he couldn't make it. He informed me at 4 a.m. yesterday, just before he was about to go and sort out his flight, he learned that they weren't letting flights out of there, everything was about to go on lockdown. So we thought rather than cancelling Simon, it would be quite good if we could get him on a video link, so that maybe he could give a bit of his speech, he could say hello to everyone, and also tell us a bit about what's going on elsewhere in Europe where there is a heavy quarantine. Now, a lot of people will know Simon Harris, because Simon is sometimes compared a little bit to Dion, because Simon was another man who was once part of the Civic Nationalist Movement. He once worked with a different group until he started to see, or started to notice, quite a lot of blatant hypocrisy. Hypocrisy that are practiced by a particular group of people who believe that they should have a safe, walled ethno-state in the Middle East, but everyone else should enjoy the fruits and benefits of an enriched, multicultural and diverse nation. And when he started pointing out these hypocrisies, he found that he was no longer welcome with his old friends. So it's great to welcome Simon today as a new friend. Sadly, he can't be here in person. If you just bear with us for a couple of minutes while Sven does the technical wizardry, we're going to arrange everything so he'll be here on the big screen for about 20 minutes.
Okay, hello everyone. Presumably I'm live. Nice to see you. Nice to be here. It would be a lot nicer to be there, actually. As you know, I hope you had a very good lunch. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to be there, because the menus look very good. I suppose you know one of the reasons why I decided not to come was that I was very worried about not being able to get home on Sunday due to flight restrictions back to Spain. Those of you who don't know me, I live in Barcelona. I think I called this right. Yesterday, when I wrote to Mark, there were 3,000 cases. Today, there are 5,000 cases. All schools are shut down. Most businesses are closed. All the shops in my area are closed. In fact, as of this afternoon, we're being placed on full quarantine and officially won't be able to leave our houses without justification. I was looking at Twitter earlier, and a couple of flights have been cancelled back to Spain, so I probably wouldn't have been able to get back home tomorrow. As far as I'm concerned, not being able to be with my family in a time of crisis would have been terrible. So that's the reason why I'm not there. Apropos of that, I'm going to kind of give a speech. I can show you, I've got lots of papers here. The speech has changed a lot. As the topic is community building, I was going to talk about the whole red pilling process, basically converting normies into nationalists, and particularly talking about my own case, which is that of what I call a default leftist. A default leftist normie, basically. And I think there are lots of people like this. And the speech was originally called Fertile Ground, or the ground is more fertile than you think, because I think lots of these people are perfectly convertible. In my case, one of the reasons why I didn't move over, not was for any ideological reasons, but it was because I was kind of getting on with my life, working, my work environment. I would have caused trouble, but I was having some, you know, sneakily politically incorrect and dissident ideas along the way. As soon as I broke out of that, I was able to come over. Okay, this was going to be quite a long speech, and as a result, and it was going to end with things like waking up to Islam, or giving examples, waking up to Islam, Brexit, Trump, and how these brought people over. But my decision is now that I'm going to give you a review of some of the points. I hope it's coherent. I hope it makes sense. And I'm going to just skip the last section. and go on to some thoughts about coronavirus, because I do think that coronavirus is both a threat to us and an opportunity. Hope it makes sense. And here we go. Okay, I came to most of your attention about 2 years ago as a result of conversations I was having with the infamous Brian of London. And it was as a result of these conversations that I moved over from civic nationalism, the counter jihad, fully into nationalist. And one of the strange things that struck me at the time, I remember going through the process, and there were very few people around to help me. There was nobody to talk to. Actually, somebody I have very fond memories from this period of is Earthling Carl. He was always there in my comments section, sniping, saying, "Simon, you're going to be a nationalist soon. You're a nationalist soon. I know what kind of guy you like." And he was totally right. And I will always appreciate that support he gave me, because I felt there was somewhere to go to. And one of the things I realized in the process that honest people, if you're reasonably intelligent and inquiring, you're going to get here in the end, basically because, you know, we've got all the arguments, we've got the science, we're right. Instincts, this is how people feel. This is where people will naturally go. And so apart from creating content, since that time, since my conversion, I've been very much aware that it's important to be there for people. So hopefully there are a few people in the audience. I can't see you, but I think there are a few people in the audience who will, present at the conference, who will recognize that I played a very small part in them coming over to becoming full-blown nationalists. I hope so anyway. And it's not as if I did anything particularly mega. Basically, I decided to stay a member of lots of counter-jihad groups after I'd come over, but keep quiet. And all I did is like their posts, make a little comment. And finally, when the person came over, I was kind of there saying, "Oh, welcome. I was waiting for you. I'm glad you've come over." And just give a little welcome. And I think this is a really important thing for all of us to do. Anyway, another thing that I tend to do as a kind of proselytizing activity is I make it very clear that people can write articles for my blog, European Freedom, and lots of people do. Lots of people on Twitter contribute, you know, one or two articles. It's very difficult. Also, other people like Shazia, for example, writes fairly frequently. Horace has written some. Dionne's written quite a few. But there's a lot of people that have just written one or two. And for these people, it's very difficult to have an outlet for their writing. And I think writing things down is very important, because it's through writing that you develop your ideas. There's more to life than YouTube, in my opinion. And even if you want to be a good YouTuber, you should probably script and write down your ideas, I think, anyway. Okay, so and my favorite kind of ideas on this theme is the red pill process. Quite a few people have written red pill experiences for me, because particularly those are great ones to share in the counter jihad groups, because often this person hasn't come over yet. You can share their article, and anybody who's got doubts, they haven't upset anybody yet. So anybody who's got doubts will comment and say, "Yeah, I've been thinking that, mate." And you kind of can move the conversation along. And I don't take a very active part. But there's quite a few people. I've been doing this quite a lot and for quite a long time. A little bit in the quiet, really. Anyway, last week, a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine from one of these groups, a guy called Josh, sent me an article called "The Road to Nationalism," which is very much a red pill journey. How he moved from the counter jihad. He became an expert on Islam, so he got quite prominent, a little bit like I did. Got quite prominent, well respected amongst the group. Then he noticed the grifting in particular, and he noticed certain inconsistencies with the arguments. and came over to nationalism. It's kind of simple and straightforward article, and yeah, it's pretty good. But it received a rather untoward comment, and I'm going to read the comment directly to you. Okay, here it is. My computer is messing around. I'm going to read the comment out to you. Where is it? Okay, this is what the comment says, and I'll read it to you in the slightly pompous tone, I think the guy wrote it. I do have concerns about the acceptance of nouveau nationalists. It is easy and clear to see that those of us who have always seen the writing on the wall are quick to welcome the prodigal sons and daughters. My problem is, how do we know that they are not opening our ranks to more traitors? If I may take you, Simon, as an example, it has taken you until middle age to shake off your communist and progressive identity. Whilst I do not doubt your integrity, the New World Order have infiltrated and destroyed from within many legitimate movements. It was a pleasure to see you awaken to reality, but in our rush to gain mainstream acceptance, we will continue to allow the Trojan horse into the gates. I mention this because someone such as Sargon, liberal, Count Dankula, commie, or Tommy Robinson, clear psyop, would be quickly promoted to hero status if they ever changed perspectives. And yet, who really knows their roots or their end game? Hope I didn't offend, but it worries me. We see politicians doing all this all the time. They're just actors paying an audience. Okay, yes, and we do see politicians doing this all the time. But I think there's kind of quite a lot to unpack from this comment, particularly if you've read Josh's article, if you know my story, and if you know the story and conversion process of some of the other people in the room. Okay, so the commenter apologised at the end, but I think, and this is something all of us need to be careful about, and particularly those of you who aren't nouveau nationalists and have been around for some time, There's a kind of subculture element to this, and it's exclusive and not really wanting to welcome people in. And as a result, people can be, and I'm certainly not saying everybody, but people can be suspicious to newcomers and unwilling to welcome them aboard. Millennial Woes, who I know is in the audience, has discussed this phenomenon, and it's precisely the opposite of what we need if we're to develop a winning strategy and turn what at the moment seems like the end of the West around. We need to encourage people to embrace nationalism and not be suspicious of nouveau nationalists, because they're somehow less authentic than those of us or those of you who've been around for a very long time. This seems to me a very strange form of inverse gatekeeping, actually, which keeps potential converts out rather than encouraging them to come in. You see, being suspicious or thinking that nouveau nationalists aren't as authentic or aren't as useful is a very flawed tactic, because I would say, and I think this is from experience and experience from many more of you in the audience, we're actually very, very useful. One of the reasons for this is we tend to have more empathy with those who are on the other side of the fence, much less likely to poo-poo them, because we were that way very recently. This also means that because we can still see the world from their point of view, we're probably a lot better at constructing arguments that will bring them over. Okay, I'm criticizing the movement in general, but as I said, it's not everyone. For example, what I've seen of Mark and Laura's efforts recently, converting many people on YouTube, they seem to agree with me. They want to bring people over to our side. And as I said before, if you're honest, intelligent, sincere, and searching for the truth, you will get there. You just need a little bit of help. Obviously, we need to be careful about who we bring over. So yobbish behavior needs to be thought about. And once again, and weirdos, actually. And Mark has spoken about that guy, and we need to keep that guy who purports to uphold our ideals, but is a complete loony. We need to keep him at a very long arm's length. Okay, the commenter also talks about having to be on the lookout for infiltrators. Yes, of course, but this is something that happens in all political groups, possibly a little more so on the dissident right, where you've got groups like Hope Not Hate. I was actually victim when at a meeting with Anne-Marie Waters, we ended up having a Hope Not Hate BBC journalist filming us. And my first meeting, I ended up being in a documentary as being dangerous far right. You need to watch out for these people. They're all over the place. Then he goes on to talk about, yes, this is the next point. However, these infiltrators are unlikely to have a profile as high as somebody like Tommy Robinson or Sargon. And neither of them are likely to join us because there are too few grifting opportunities. What's more, I think Sargon is unlikely to turn his back on his black grandfather, and it would be very difficult to stop Tommy from coming to events dressed in his Mossad t-shirt. Joking aside, though, we need to continue with people like Sargon and Tommy doing what we're doing now when they make points that are consistent with our worldview. We need to point that out and support them. When they seem as if they're gatekeeping or being deliberately disingenuous, which seems quite frequently to me, we also need to point that out. So we need to have a balanced approach. As I said, as someone who described himself as having this default leftist position, certainly in my case, both Sargon, for his kind of SJW videos at the time, and Tommy in the moment, and we're talking early 2017, Tommy at that time were definitely gateways to nationalism. What tends to happen is once you get past them, they tend to become gatekeepers, but you only see that once you move past them and you think, how is it or why is it that you've been involved in this for so long and you can't see what I see? You must be dishonest. Okay, so let's move on to this point about communism. He described me as a communist and a progressive. Okay, there's no point in trying to convince the real leftists, the real leftist zealots, or the BAME. But I'm convinced, and I say this from personal experience, that many of us or many people are indoctrinated into adopting a default leftist position. I was stuck in this position for most of my life, not because I was particularly ideological, I suppose, is the word for it, but I'd just been indoctrinated, and it was my whole world, my family, my friends, at school, at university. I mean, when I look at my school and university friends from Facebook, it's kind of embarrassing, but they're really stuck in this mold because everybody's taught, however moderate they really are, that the left are always the good guys and it's cool to be a revolutionary. But I was never a communist. The maximum I did, I was a Labour Party member for a couple of years after university in the early 80s. But in actual fact, this was a really useful experience because I only lasted for 2 years, partly because the lefty lovies, the middle-class lefty lovies, really got on my nerves. And I developed a very, very healthy dislike of the real leftist zealots, people who were members of militant and socialist workers at party at the time. And this is really useful information because it allows you know them, and it allows you to spot them a mile off in later life. If you go out with a group of friends, most people will be default leftists, but every now and again you'll come across a real zealot, and it's really useful to be able to notice him and point him out. And I was doing this long before I came over because these people are idiots, basically, in my opinion. Okay, I also read quite a lot of Marx and Trotsky and a few theoretical books at the time because I kind of wanted to understand what I was getting into. And even back then, I was able to understand that an ideology that saw human beings only as labor, only as a cog in the machine, was bound to be dehumanizing, and was also bound to lead to gulags and punishment for wrongthink. And even I was fully aware of the crimes of the Soviet Union, but I also knew that they had been repeated in China, and the film The Killing Fields had come out about the Khmer Rouge regime. So I and everybody else knew about the brutality of communism, but still, it's the left of the good guys. Revolutionaries are, you know, it's cool to be a revolutionary. And it's, if you notice this, it's really interesting, isn't it? The way the left's idolizes, well, has stopped idolizing the likes of Stalin, Mao, and Pol Pot, but still view Lenin, Trotsky, and Che Guevara as heroes. But the only difference ideologically between the two is the latter group didn't have time to commit as many mass murders as the former. So they've got no blood on their hands, but they would have if they'd been around. The left's narrative is also supported by lots of minor characters, people like Einstein, Anne Frank, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, John Lennon even, Bono, and a whole host more. They fight the good fight against injustice, inequality, and racism, and the Ku Klux Klan, apartheid, slavery, and colonialism, and white nationalist demons like you and me. The supreme antagonists, though, are always Hitler and the Nazis, and the epitome of evil is the Holocaust. This narrative, as we all know, is the reason why we're not allowed to be nationalists, and why we mustn't be racist, and why we must have open borders, and why we have to give our countries, the countries our ancestors built, over to invaders. Where's this gone? So another important thing about lefty normalcy, and this is taking a little bit longer than I expected, so I'm going to skip to the coronavirus quite quickly. people inculcated the idea of Labour Party members supporting the Labour Party for a person like me isn't really ideological. Strangely, it's identitarian. The reason, we all know this, the reason why you support the Labour Party is because your grandfather did, your father did, everybody around your way supports Labour, and it's impossible to do anything else. I mean, I even thought in an identitarian fashion about the Robin Hood legend. Rather than steal from the rich to give to the poor, as far as I was concerned, it was steal from the Anglo-Saxons to give, steal from the Normans, sorry, to give to the Anglo-Saxons. So even back then, I was viewing this in identitarian terms. I think it's been really important the way the Red Wall has moved over. I stayed in Britain, probably would have been a Red Wall kind of voter. It would have taken me a long time to realise that the Labour Party are in fact traitors. I would have thought they represented us and as out of the Labour voting tradition, but I definitely would have moved over. And I mean, this is why so many people have moved over now. And I'm sure we're all certain that very suspicious about the Conservative Party. However, I think the fact that the working class are abandoning the Labour Party in droves is very positive, because certainly speaking from my own point of view, when I was upholding those values and a Labour voter, it was very difficult to move over. Moving over to a Conservative actually moves the people closer to us. However suspicious we should be of the Conservatives. Because the fact of the matter is, working class voters aren't real Tories. So what's happened very recently is their allegiance has been unbuckled. And so either the Tories deliver the goods on Brexit, immigration, or former Labour strongholds will be fertile ground for any party with a generally nationalist message. There's also been quite a lot of talk about Bulldog Patriots. I think some great work has been done by lots of people, Horus, Morgoth, people like that, bringing down the Churchill myth. And it's very interesting. Once again, the Churchill myth leads to exactly the same place. Hitler and the Nazis are the epitome of evil, and the Holocaust is the biggest crime ever. Very, very interesting. Another thing that I noticed being abroad is this narrative, it pretty much doesn't matter which country you live in. This is an almost global narrative. In Spain, for example, there's a very similar story surrounding Franco. Franco supported Hitler in the Second World War. Therefore, Franco is evil. Therefore, we have to obliterate the memory of Franco. Therefore, you can't be a Spanish nationalist. You'll have seen this very recently with the exhumation of his body. We have a law here called the Law of Historical Memory, where really you're only allowed to praise a Republican victim in the Civil War. And very, very soon they're going to be making Franco apologism illegal. Much like the Tories do in Britain, the Conservative Partido Popular have turned their backs on Franco. So they've turned their backs on Spanish nationalism. And this is why Vox is rising. Okay, going to finish this section quite soon. But this is really an opportunity for us, I think, to bring lots more people over. Because it's not just immigration, it's not just Brexit, it's not just borders, it's not just industry. We know that the Tories have embraced the SJW agenda. And certainly looking at Facebook, one of the things that upsets people particularly is, you know, police driving around in rainbow cars, the whole idea of feminism, blue-haired feminists, gay pride parades, excesses at gay pride parades, drag queen story hour. These really upset normal conservatives and civic nationalists. And the Tories are all embraced this. And the truth is, the commentator before said that I was a progressive. I was never a progressive. I went to university from 1978 to 1981. And, you know, I've had a bad reputation on feminism and LGBT for the whole of my life. And the big advantage of being a tail end boomer like I am is that we remember a time prior to political correctness. Okay, I'm trying to rush through all these ideas very quickly. The point I'm trying to make is there's lots of fertile ground out there. There are lots of default leftists, and there are lots of civic nationalists or Tories who are pretty unhappy with the system, but they're crammed into the idea. And what I was going to do with this next is I was going to give you examples from me waking up to Islam, Brexit, Donald Trump, these kind of things becoming part of the counter jihad. So I suppose this last 5 minutes is going to be a little less coherent. But I think the situation we're in now really is, given that there is fertile ground out there, and there is a lot of fertile ground, coronavirus has been a complete game changer. I don't think you're fully aware of this in the UK yet, but I'm telling you, me on Tuesday, it was my 60th birthday on Tuesday, on Wednesday, I still wasn't worried. The catalyst for me waking up was when on Thursday night I saw on the news that the town surrounding Igualada, which is a provincial capital just north of Barcelona, had been completely shut down. And we have some friends that live there, and they WhatsApped my wife and said, "We can't get out of our house. Fortunately, we bought enough food, but we won't be able to come and visit you in Barcelona." So they were really not bothered about this. And it was then the following morning that I started to think about it. If Igualada has been shut down, it's very possible that over the weekend, Barcelona could be shut down. And if I get to the UK and come to the conference, I'm sure I would have a great time. I'd meet lots of friends. But I could well get stuck in the UK on Sunday night. And the whole idea, and this is what nationalism is about. Nationalism is about family and future. And the whole idea of being stuck in the UK whilst a crisis developed here in Barcelona, separated from my wife and family, it was something I quite simply couldn't live with. And I just didn't want to take the risk. And kind of yesterday throughout the day, I kind of felt rather stupid because I really don't like letting people down. I didn't want to let you lot down. I wanted to meet you. But at the same time, if I'd let my family down, I wouldn't have been able to live with myself. And it was a little bit like the calm before the storm yesterday. We knew something was going to happen, but we didn't quite know what it was. And we'd seen all these dystopian images coming from China. And, you know, it was very worrying. So we know something like this is happening, but there was nothing you could put your finger on. And also the very other strange thing is I haven't seen any illnesses. We've heard talk of illnesses, but I haven't seen any. So there's this nagging doubt that perhaps it wasn't true. Now, somebody like me, all of us have a very healthy distrust of what we hear on mainstream media, which is the primary source of information. But given the risks involved, I decided it was time to err on the side of caution. And even if people have suggested that it's pure invention, the lockdowns, the shop and school closures, the cancellation of events, and the growing sense of panic are completely genuine. What is happening now, it's like a ghost town here in Barcelona. We can't leave our houses. Fortunately, we've got enough food. We reckon we've got enough food for about 5 weeks. So we should live like kings. But we can't go out. So it's extremely weird. Everybody's also got doubts about how the virus started. Was it created in a lab in order to provoke a global crisis? Was it created by experimenters by accident? Or is it simply a natural occurrence that passed from animals to humans? We don't know, and at this point, it doesn't really matter. Because whether it's the controllers created it to manipulate world events, or it happened naturally, they're going to take advantage of it in exactly the same way. And it's quite difficult, and I think this is what we need to be talking about. And when I talk about the ground being fertile, I know this jump between the two sections has been rather big, but there's lots of people waking up. Lots of the rather left-wing people I talk to know that there's something wrong here, and they don't know what it is. And very, very, from now on, we nationalists need to be analysing what's happening, because we need to be looking for threats. And we also need to be looking for opportunities in order to bring people over. So before I finish, I just want to go through a few threats. I don't really know what's happening, but these are just a few ideas that have occurred as I observe what's happening around me. Okay, the first is the introduction of police state measures, such as lockdowns, curfews, and self-isolation, under the auspices of it being for our own good. This is why I'm very skeptical about the real dangers of the virus itself. The reaction of our friends in Igualada to their movements being completely restricted was very worrying. And I'm sure there are even more restrictive measures to come. The fact that we are continually being told that the health crisis could last for months, possibly into next year, means that such measures can be put into place on an almost permanent basis, certainly long enough for people to get used to them. Once they've been established, they're unlikely to be removed. It seems to me it's absolutely no coincidence that all this was first tested in China. Already here in Spain, yeah, the second thing is self-isolation and social distancing. This seems an ideal way to break down communities and increase the level of bug man atomization, for want of a better word. Already here in Spain, people are no longer greeting each other with a kiss or a handshake. One of the things I like about living here is the civilizing effect that physical touching has on society. People that show affection and respect by touching tend to bond better. If this crisis goes on for a long time, these basic customs could be lost. I'm convinced this is part of the globalist agenda. Thirdly, I've already seen mention in the news of elections being postponed for at least a year. It seems that the democratic systems are being broken down. The fact that they're even talking about delaying Brexit talks should be a massive red flag to everyone. Similarly, travel bans and being encouraged to eat rice and pulses, both of which would reduce our carbon footprint. You've got to stay at home. You can't eat red meat. What does this sound like? This sounds like the climate change agenda. Seems very suspicious to me that both, even though coronavirus might be bona fide, both agendas seem to have the same outcome. And finally, the economic crisis will ultimately end up benefiting the oligarchs and the plutocrats. We don't yet know how this will pan out, but I guess it will make ordinary people poorer, and I wouldn't be surprised if it led to the increasing phasing out of physical money, such as notes and coins, because these can be discouraged as they spread virus, or it can be claimed that they spread virus, that they're dirty. Okay, opportunities for nationalists. These are just a few ideas that have occurred to me as a result of facing the reality of the problem over the last few days. I'm sure there will be more. As nationalists, we need to be aware of the threats. We need to be discussing them and analysing them. I haven't thought about them very deeply. But here's some ideas. Coronavirus is clearly a result of people's ability to pass freely from country to country. It's a result of globalisation. It seems likely that we will be able to push for greater border controls and limit who enters our countries. This is a double-edged sword, however, because it also tends to keep people. This is happening when the controllers decide. It's also interesting, though, at least in Spain and the news in Spain, that nobody's mentioning the migrant crisis on the news cycle anymore. It's all coronavirus, coronavirus. Meanwhile, we're being invaded. But having said that, the pandemic is bound to increase xenophobia in a good sense, because we'll have an increasingly legitimate fear of outsiders as potential bringers of disease. This will encourage people to stick to their own, and we should be stressing racial and familial ties. So not just our community, our real brethren, our real family. We really must be encouraging people to stick to their own. Furthermore, as companies that depend on slave labor in the third world will be hit hard, I think this is also going to relocalize the economy. Anybody who can find their components close to hand or close at home, or in Europe, will benefit in the forthcoming months. And the truth is, any country that doesn't have a strong manufacturing base is a weak country. Manufacturing is strength. I know this from the north of England. This is why the north has fallen apart, because its manufacturing base fell. Hopefully, we're going to develop the production chains, and this over time will encourage a greater degree of self-sufficiency. That's very important. All these things have double-edged swords, I think. I can't help but think that we're being played, though. See, what I think is happening is a paradigm shift. In much the same way as 9/11, the 2007 and 8 financial crisis, Brexit and Trump, coronavirus and the subsequent economic crisis are a defining moment. And this is why I really didn't want to go through the old arguments of Islam, Brexit and Trump for my own red-pilling process. Over the next few weeks, I want to develop new strategies for talking to normies in particular about coronavirus, the economic crisis, and things like the localization of industry. As I said before, as nationalists, We need to be thinking very hard how to guard against the threat that these two events are to our people. And we also need to be thinking very hard about the opportunities that will benefit us. We need to be thinking in short, medium, and long term, because rest assured, the controllers, the plutocrats, the oligarchs, have already been thinking about this for some time. And now I come to the end. We still want to red pill people. We want to red pill the default leftists. We want to red pill the civic nationalists. We want to red pill the Tories. So we'd better start thinking about this now. Coronavirus is coming to a town near you. You ought to be talking about it. I imagine you have been over lunch. Hope everybody starts thinking about this seriously now and thinking about it in tactical terms. That's all I've got to say. I hope you found that kind of interesting, and I hope you understand that in these rather strange circumstances, this was a needs must speech. Thank you for listening.